Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. On today's program, entering the foster care system can be a frightening experience for children. Today we'll hear from Beth Mann with the Organization for Love of Children. You'll hear about the inspiring work they're doing. And in today's reinvention story, we'll meet Pat Reed, a retired fire captain and owner of Angie's Firehouse Tavern in Belmont. Up first, the weekend news. President Obama hit the road to promote his message on how to boost manufacturing in the U.S., and as Emily McCord reports, the president's plans could help Ohio's economy.
During his State of the Union address, Obama asked Congress to approve $1 billion to create more of what he calls manufacturing innovation institutes, or partnerships between the public and private sector and colleges to help build manufacturing technologies. There are a few already underway. Youngstown is home to one pilot hub and is a model for Obama's plan. Richard Stock is an economics professor at the University of Dayton and says Ohio has a good shot at getting more of these hubs if cities in the state can follow Youngstown's example.
The lesson from Youngstown is that you can't think just in terms of one metropolitan area, that you would really have to think about bringing the capabilities of Columbus, Dayton, and Cincinnati together, because they want to see a collaboration.
Ohio is heavily reliant on manufacturing. During the recession, one-third of job losses were in that sector. The White House says there are more initiatives to build it up again, including ending tax breaks to ship jobs overseas and enforcing trade laws. For Ohio Public Radio, I'm Emily McCord.
Last Monday, Pope Benedict XVI announced he will step down at the end of the month for health reasons. While the resignation is significant for its rarity, it could be a sign of the times. Pope Benedict is the first in 600 years to step down as head of the Catholic Church. Historically, they have served until the time of their death. But Sister Angela Ann Zukowski with the Institute for Pastoral Initiatives at the University of Dayton says that while the resignation remains a shock to some, the idea of popes retiring has at least been a part of theological discussion for decades.
The Holy Fathers are living longer. And the world we live in is a little more complex in its constituency.
Sister Angela Ann believes the Catholic Church may look at leadership a little differently as they seek to elect the next pope, a change in perspective that stems from challenges both within the church and from outside the church.
Because of social media networking, because of all the digital technologies, we know more immediately the world we are dealing with. So someone who is in leadership needs to have the kind of kaleidoscope view or perspective, a lens that can capture all the different dimensions of what's going on in the world and ask some prophetic questions of how is the church to respond in all of these situations today.
Sister Angela Ann Zukowski with the Institute for Pastoral Initiatives at the University of Dayton. She says Pope Benedict's resignation may not have a big impact for Catholics today, but what matters most is what vision of the world the church's next pope will have. Plans for the Boonshoft Museum of Discovery to open a satellite operation in Springfield's Upper Valley Mall are ahead of schedule. WISO's Wayne Baker reports the museum is now on pace to open in early March.
Boonshoft Vice President of External Relations, Diane Farrell, says the museum received an overwhelming positive response by Clark County residents and mall management when the idea of locating at the Upper Valley Mall was proposed. Farrell says the satellite museum will be an interactive experience designed for family fun.
Right now, we're setting up the museum to have 5 distinct discovery zones or learning zones. We will focus on air, earth, light, art activities, and it will really be designed so that younger children, really pre-K through about 4th grade, have some very strong opportunities to engage in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics discovery.
Farrell says the satellite museum will create 2 new jobs and volunteer opportunities, and while considered a temporary location, there is no reason why it couldn't become a permanent one.
To us, a measure of success will be if we're able to move into larger space, and if that can work out at the mall, great. If not, we'll begin to explore other properties and spaces in the Springfield-Clark County area.
The Satellite Museum will also include a retail shop to go along with the exhibits. For WISO, I'm Wayne Baker reporting.
And in the week ahead, Governor Kasich is set to give his State of the State address on Tuesday. This week, Emily McCord spoke with Ohio Public Radio's Karen Kassler for a preview of what may come.
Governor Kasich has hinted that he's not going to be saying much new in his State of the State. Is he dampening expectations here?
I think he just wants to make it clear that he wants the focus to be on the budget. He unveiled the budget here on February 4th, and it's got all sorts of things in it. It's got a tax shift from income taxes to sales taxes in it. It's got the Medicaid expansion in it. It's got the school funding formula in it. It's got higher ed and the turnpike and all these things. And I think he doesn't want to draw attention away from that with some new announcement, and I don't think he has any new announcements. If we hear anything from the State of the State, it will be, you know, maybe a little bit of money thrown at a program, or there might be some awards given out like he did last year. But for the most part, I think the State of the State is going to be a standard speech really promoting his budget.
He has been getting some criticism from some in his own party over his plan, for example, to expand Medicaid. Will we see Kasich appealing to them in the speech? How big of a challenge is this going to be for him?
I think it's something that he has been expecting. I mean, everybody expected this when he first rolled it out. And in fact, for the weeks leading up to the budget, there was a lot of speculation about whether he would go along with Medicaid expansion. You have six states that are run by Republican governors, including Ohio, that have decided to go ahead with the Medicaid expansion, 15 states run by Democratic governors that have decided, but several prominent Republican governors have decided not to go with the Medicaid expansion because of the concerns among some Republicans about the federal debt and whether the money and the program will be there long term. And that's what Kasich is dealing with here in Ohio. This week, State Treasurer Josh Mandel, who is really hardcore conservative, according to his reputation that he's tried to build for himself, he sent a letter to House Speaker Bill Batchelder and Senate President Keith Faber urging them to reject the Medicaid expansion on those very grounds, that there is no free money, that taxpayers will pay for this in the long run. Kasich does have some selling to do among people in his own party.
Another place that he may have some selling to do, as I understand it, is his plan to tax oil and gas drillers. And this is sort of his chance. It's kind of his opportunity at the pulpit to appeal to some of his party. Are we going to see him pitch this more as well?
Well, he's been very clear since last year when he did this mid-biennium review, which was kind of a budget update halfway through the budget, that he wanted the severance tax. He wants a tax on oil and natural gas drillers because they're taking away a resource that Ohio deems is valuable. And he will continue to make the claim that Ohio's severance tax is ridiculously low now, he says. It will be still among the lowest in the country, even with the increase. And he's not putting an increase on the smaller producers. It's the larger producers, the producers that he says would take their profits and go back to Texas, as opposed to leaving money here in Ohio that he can use then to further his goal, which is, of course, the cutting of the state income tax. He wants to see the income tax eliminated eventually.
More details have been released over the governor's school funding plan. Some schools have been upset about the funding they're getting, including some of the poorer districts. What can we expect the governor to say to that, if anything?
Well, that's the part of the budget that I think has gotten the most time in terms of he unveiled that several days before he unveiled his budget, because I think he wanted some examination of that. And this week on our TV show, The State of Ohio, I talked to two school leaders who are a little bit concerned about the school funding formula and very concerned going forward about the guarantees, these so-called guarantees that some 400 districts in the state are on that preserve the money that they get from the state so they don't get cut. But many of these districts are losing population, and the governor's made the claim that this is all unsustainable. And so the school funding formula right now is a critical issue, but then also going forward, if the governor is reelected, the next budget is going to be really key for a lot of school districts to see what he does next.
You mentioned getting reelected. Do you think that he's going to be using Tuesday night for his own campaign?
Everything he does from this point on is certainly, you have to look at it in the light of the governor wants to be reelected. And so, you know, you already have some people who are critical of him in the decision to expand Medicaid, saying that this is something that he's doing because he thinks that the voters of Ohio will want this. And certainly the Democratic response has been very loud on a lot of issues because the Democrats are going to be launching their own candidate and to run against him. And so you have to look at everything that's happening now and going forward as the end game is the 2014 election for governor.
We'll be joining Karen Kassler Tuesday night for the State of the State speech. You can hear that live here on WYSO. Karen, thank you so much for being here today.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. This is Why So Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenny. The Organization for Love of Children, or FLOC, raises funds to provide enrichment and educational activities for neglected and abused children, children in foster care, and in recent years, because of the economy, children in need. From newborn to 18 years of age in the Dayton area, FLOC was born in 1980 and has grown into an industry of passionate volunteers. I visited their offices this week at their home in the Talbot Tower in downtown Dayton. Beth Mann is the current president. She's been with FLOC for about 7 years, and her passion for what the group is doing is evident.
What we're doing is absolutely exciting. It's powerful. It's fulfilling. You know, I've learned so much in the past 7 years about the plight of the children in Dayton that are, we work with about 5,000 kids. When I came into the program, these kids, this population, was subsidized by $2,500 for the entire population. So that's 50 cents a kid. That's pretty much why our system is very battered, very broken. In the past 6 years, we've raised approximately $400,000. Because there are no paid staff in our organization, that money goes into our programming. And that's the exciting part of it, is that, you know, you can actually visibly see the differences that we're making.
Mann takes me on a tour of FLOC's offices, and there are surprises around every corner.
This is our waiting room. It's funny. Okay, one of our biggest programs is Christmas for Kids. In the past 2 years, we've served about 2,600 children. That is a fantastic program. If you would like to volunteer for any of our programs, you walk away with the biggest hug. It is an unbelievably moving, fulfilling experience. At Christmas for Kids, we have people who come in, they serve as personal shoppers. They shop with the parents of kids in foster care and kids that, you know, are in need. And the community offers all kinds of gifts. We have a huge toy drive. We have, oh my golly, Ned, we have, you know, 50 different drop-off sites where people bring in unwrapped toys that, again, go on our shelves and go directly into these families. These families walk out this door with such Christmas joy. It is just the sprinkling of the season to see them walking out with such big smiles. And, our community did that. We did that. It's an awesome program.
Tell us about this wall here.
This is an array of kites made by the Girl Scouts. Again, Girl Scouts in the area, couldn't be better. They're doing all kinds of great stuff for us. These kites represent soaring into a better life.
A better life for some kids just means the simple things. FLOC has rooms filled with school supplies like book bags, notebooks, pencils. They also have comfort items for kids in tough situations.
You know, like these comfort blankets, these are really a necessary item for kids. You know, you can imagine leaving everything you know, coming into a very kind of sterile environment, trying to figure out where you're going to go from there. A lot of the kids have a wonderful experience in foster care, but in that transitional moment, these kind of blankets, that just gives a kid some sense of warmth, or where they're in a very cold place.
One program that I found especially moving was the duffel bag programs, and I'd like you to explain the situation and where that need came out of.
You know, Jerry, what happens when a child is removed from their home is unbelievably brutal. In many, many cases, these children do not know that they're being taken out of their home. They are sitting on the couch watching a TV show, whatever, and home is home. You know, they don't know any different. but their family has obviously been red flagged by Children's Services. A policeman and caseworker will come to their home. They are given literally 5 minutes to gather their belongings and they're taken by police car to Children's Services. It's incredibly frightening, incredibly frightening. The caseworkers are doing a phenomenal job of trying to give them support and comfort, but, you know, the reality is what it is. It's just an incredibly frightening thing. So when I first found out about this process, when our board was initially told about the process, we were told that the kids were given a trash bag and they had 5 minutes to collect their stuff. You know, we just thought that was horrifying, horrifying. So we asked the community again if they could, you know, provide resources and financial resources. They certainly stepped up to the plate. And our board was lucky enough to procure hundreds of duffel bags. It's a duffel bag, but it's something that, for example, this past Christmas, a caseworker took a child out of their home and gave the child a duffel bag to collect the stuff in. And the little boy looked at the caseworker and said, "Oh, is this my Christmas present?" You know, well, it's that kind of thing. You know, at least we can give these children, you know, the respect of moving on to another transition and hopefully a better transition. That's the kind of thing that just makes sense to our board.
Flock has a board of 7 members, and Beth Mann says together with volunteers, the needs of children are constantly being assessed and programs are tweaked or developed to meet those needs.
A lot of the kids who were pulled out of their home, in those 5 minutes, they're not going to get their clothing. That's not what they're going to think about. They're not going to get their shoes. They come into care, into foster care, with literally nothing. You know, they might grab a stuffed animal that means something to them and a picture of their family. What we're doing right now is we're putting together a donation drive for those kids. We need, like, new sweatsuits. We can't use used clothing because the bed bug problem is such an issue at this point. But we need new clothing, and we need, you know, comfort materials, just the creature comforts that we take for granted. You know, we'd like to give these kids new blankets, give them shoes, give them socks. They're cold. They need sweatsuits. They need just things that you wouldn't even think twice about. The first year we had a gala. We have a gala every year where we present some of the kids that we're working with. We present our programming. We talk about what the past year has held, and every year has held more and more completely surprising and uplifting updates. First year we had our gala, raised about $26,000, and with that money started a birthday club foundation for kids in foster care. Many, many children in foster care do not celebrate their birthdays. Some of them don't even know when their birthdays are. So we developed a birthday club, and now every child in foster care gets a birthday gift and card from Flock. And that's, you know, just one of the programs that's just so incredibly exciting because, you know, the kids are so grateful. Any small gesture, any small, you know, it uplifts their day. It uplifts their life.
There's more to what Flock is doing than just small gestures. They're providing a normalcy to kids' lives. And for teens heading into adulthood, the opportunity to experience important milestones that may come more easily for others.
Foster kids are moved an average of 7 to 9 times from the time they are freshmen in high school to the time they're seniors. Because of that, they don't go to their proms. They don't go to their homecomings. They really, you know, don't have much of a sense of community. And very, very disparaging, very difficult. Children's Services Independent Living hosts a winter ball every year. That's the one event that these kids can absolutely go to. So the first year I'm at the Haynes building, that's where Children's Services is housed, there's a young lady who's kind of wandering around the halls there, and I said, "So are you going to the winter ball this year?" And she said, No, I'm not going to the winter ball. I don't have any clothes. I'm not going to go. So a friend of mine and I went to some various shops in the area and had 7 gowns donated. And we brought them up to the Haynes building, kind of hooked them up to a wall. And I brought the young lady in, and my friend and I were, you know, saying, "Okay, if you could take one of these dresses to the winter ball, would you want to go?" And she said, "Yeah, now what? I'd have to dry clean it. And I don't have the money for dry cleaning, and you probably want it back the next day." And I said, No, honey, if you want to take that dress, you're going to take it home with you. That'll be yours." She started crying, and I got to tell you, my friend and I were so in. We were so invested. We went to dress shops for the next 7 years.
Wow.
Isn't that so cool?
Wow, it's beautiful.
Look at this.
7 years of shopping has resulted in the installation of a boutique next door to Flock's offices. It's here where young men and women can get their outfits for the winter ball.
Check this out. This is informal wear for young men. Racks and racks of pants and shirts and that kind of stuff. Then we have suits and ties.
Mann says the clothing gathered here is available throughout the year for job interviews or other important events. Another component of what Flock does is help prepare kids for life beyond the foster care system.
Check that out. Hundreds and hundreds of beautiful gowns. Sequins and sparkles and joy. And this is like, it's a Cinderella night. It is. It's just, it's beautiful. And none of this is a handout. That's the very important thing. None of this is a handout. The kids who shop at our boutique have to have a letter of reference from someone in the community, a letter of reference from somebody in their school, and a letter of intent from them. We get that information. They can shop away. And it's all donated. And everything in there is everything you see around here is donated. It's amazing what Dayton has done for these kids.
Tell me a little bit about the purpose behind the letter of reference, the letters of intent.
Well, you know, I think these kids, you know, you just can't imagine the difficult roads these kids have been through. The stories of day-to-day hardship are heartbreaking. And a lot of these kids don't have kind of a social awareness. They're just kind of, you know, pushed through the system. And I think if you take the time to make them feel empowered about what it is they're doing and who it is they are, it makes a difference in how they view themselves. And we've seen that. I mean, we've seen that. So that's the truly inspiring thing for me, is to be able to go on the other side and see that, you know, that kid can interview a little bit better because they feel a little bit better about themselves. They're feeling more fulfilled in who they are.
To give the kids an extra shot at future success, Flock has developed the Betsy Hubler Skills Center, named after Kent State professor and Beth Mann's mom. It's filled with donated computers and a developing library.
You know, when kids are emancipated at 18, it's a very, very slippery slope. It's very difficult. So we're really trying to look into providing resources for the emancipated teen as well. We're going to start doing checkbook exercises, just knowing how to operate your finances. We're doing interviewing skills. We're trying to do just a holistic life skill scenario. Right now, we are just developing a tutoring program. We need tutors. If you are academically talented in high school and you would like to look for community service, we have lots and lots of kids who need all kinds of educational help. The county commissioners of Dayton are an unbelievable resource for us. They're just fantastic. They believe in what we're doing. They will give a certificate of appreciation honoring any tutor who's helping us out, donating their hours of service. They will mark the hours of service that they've donated, and that is a great door opener for lots of colleges. It's such a win-win because we have so many kids that need the help. We have so many kids that are struggling academically, and the kids that can help them, we can help you open doors to college.
Beth Mann with For Love of Children, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for highlighting our need. I so appreciate it. Thank you.
To make donations or find out more about services for Love of Children, you can visit their website, flockdayton.org. That's flocdayton.org. This is WISO Weekend on WYSO. Patrick Reed is a retired Dayton fire captain and owner of the family restaurant Angie's. Angie's first opened as a Hungarian restaurant in 1938. It was a Belmont institution, famous for its cabbage rolls, until it shut down in the 1990s. Pat Reed reopened the neighborhood icon in 2009 as Angie's Firehouse Tavern.
I started off in 1979 as a firefighter. It was never a dream of mine, but it turned out to be a pretty good job. The city treated us good. We were well paid for putting our bodies on the line every third day. And then I got promoted to lieutenant, you know, which gave me the opportunity to spread my knowledge to the young guys coming on the job. And I got promoted to captain, finally. The city provided me with a good career for 30 years. And by the way, to any firefighters out there, 30 years might be a bit much. I have fire dreams at night. There's a little post-traumatic things that go on there, and it just kind of makes me think that maybe I stayed just a little bit too long. Because towards the end of my career, I wasn't worried about myself, but I got all these kids working for me, you know, and I prayed every night when I went to sleep, and I said, you know, please let me be the best I can be, and please do not let any of my kids get hurt, you know. And when you get to that point, you know, maybe it's time to move on. Right when I was retiring, I was closing the deal on this place. It was always a dream of mine to have a family-owned business that you could pass down to your kids. And I wasn't actively looking, but I kept driving by here, and I saw the place was closed, and I thought, let me take a look at this place, you know. And it wasn't for sale. I just happened to do a lot of legwork and found out who the owner was, and she was willing to sell. I liked the layout of the place, and I had a vision of what it could look like, but it was this close to the wrecking ball. It was in such distress, I thought, well, let's see what we're getting into. We brought in plumbers, electricians, builders, and it was pretty much unanimous thumbs down. And I was so disappointed, you know. I thought, I see something, but everyone else doesn't. Am I crazy? You know, do I see something that's impossible? Am I going to take on something that's just going to leave me broke? And my daughter, Jen, my oldest daughter, called me later on that day and gave me the shove I needed. She said, Dad, what do you think? And I said, well, you hear what everybody said. She said, Dad, what do you think? I said, I'm not sure. She goes, we can do this. We can do this. It was what I wanted to hear. I said, okay, let's do it. I said, but I'm going to need your help. And both my daughters helped out. And coincidentally, both my son-in-laws were temporarily between jobs. They all helped out. And we watched the place, you know, change. And it's the kind of thing that can break up some families, you know. But it has pulled our family together. I've got nieces here, nephews here. My sister makes the cabbage rolls. It is truly a family operation. We were kind of bucking the odds because that's when the economy was down. Money was hard to get a hold of. And I didn't go into this blind. I knew I wouldn't be taking a check out of here for a long time. But fortunately, I've got my fire pension. It's an advantage a lot of business owners don't have. They have to live off their business. I don't. So everybody gets paid except me, and I'm okay with that. I'm making a difference. The city was good to me for 30 years. I mean, they paid me well, and I could take a distressed business and turn it into something and do something for the business district, because we have a lot of vacant space around here. And so we're kind of an anchor in this area, and it makes me very proud. As you get older, your values change, and you feel like, that's why you find older people doing volunteer stuff, you know? You just feel like giving back and leaving some kind of legacy.
This reinvention story was produced by Chandra Jones, Liz Cambron, Kyle Wilkinson, Julia Reichert, and Sarah Buckingham. Reinvention Stories is brought to you by WYSO and Local Lore, a national initiative produced by AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio Incorporated, in collaboration with Ziga, with financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's it for this week's edition of WYSO Weekend. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks to all our guests, and thank you for listening to member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, a broadcast service of Antioch University for the Miami Valley. Coming up next on WYSO, The Book Nook.
Hello, Luke Dennis here, WISO's Director of Development. Our spring membership drive is coming up March 4th through 10th. Now, you've heard us talk about matching grants during the drives. They really work. Pool your money with friends or coworkers, and during the drive, we'll use it to challenge other listeners to give, too. Donate a dollar, and it turns into two. And while that magic is happening, we will acknowledge your group on the air. Call me at 769-1379 to learn more. Thank you.